In today's episode, we're going to be covering 21 free and low-cost solutions for running your business. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 85. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, a podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Mike?
I am drooling over Apple's new hardware updates.
Yeah, a lot of people are. Did you see the MacBook Pro, the super high-end one that's thin like an Air?
And that's the one I'm drooling over. But unfortunately, it's $3,000, and I don't know as I can justify dropping $3,000 on that.
Well, it starts at $2,200, but if you want the 16 gigs of RAM, and I think there's some other, like the super fast processor and the 768 gig SSD drive. I like that they're raising the bar because everyone will follow, and I love those specs, and I can't wait until that's, you know, half the price.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the price alone, I looked at it and I said, wow, that's about the price of a brand new desktop, which, of course, I was also thinking about getting a desktop in the near future because I haven't upgraded my desktop in probably, I think it's the same processor and motherboard and stuff that I bought probably 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, it's kind of old.
Yeah, I have a desktop with this exactly the same thing where the processor motherboard it's actually probably 7 or 8 years old at this point, but I upgraded the RAM and I got two huge hard drives and I do software RAID between them and we use it to store photos and kind of do a local backup of everything. Because now, you know, I have a laptop it only has 256 gigs. It's an SSD drive and even that drive was $500 at the time. And so I'm just realizing that my laptops are not going to have for a while, they're not going to have enough storage to hold everything that we own digitally. And so that's really our backup machine and video editing setup.
I'm looking at the hardware specs, though, and it amazes me that they're able to keep it in a package that's only about 4.5 pounds. Because I just remember my old laptop before I got the MacBook Air, I had a Lenovo. But, I mean, it was a beast. I mean, including the power supply and everything, it was a good 10, 11 pounds.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing. So, hey, we have some software to give away. It's the Diablo 3 game we mentioned a few weeks ago that I had forgotten to give away at MicroConf. We had a bunch of submissions for ideas for future podcasts like we had asked for. And I think the 15th submission that we had said we'd do it on the 15th one, it's someone named Andrew. And he didn't give us a last name, but I have his email. And Andrew, I will be getting in touch with you probably before this podcast airs and getting the copy of Diablo 3 to you. So round of applause for that. Something else, we were contacted by Russell Thaxton, and he's a researcher, and he runs the annual Micro ISV survey. And so a lot of you in the audience have probably taken this before. If you have a one-person software company, whether it's web or mobile or desktop, he basically surveys micro ISVs. It's the term that Russell uses to kind of head up his research. In any case, he does a survey every year, and then he publishes the results. And it's something cool you should be a part of if you have a one-person software company. So if you go to survey.microisvresearch.org, you can fill out the survey. It doesn't begin until August 1st, but if you enter your email there, you know, he'll pop you an email when it's ready. And there's a bunch of giveaways. We're actually sponsoring it. We're giving away a lifetime membership to the Micropreneur Academy. He's going to do just a random drawing. I think I offered 5 copies of my book. There's a bunch of stuff. He has about $1,800 in prizes, and he's done the survey for 2 or 3 years now. If you have a micro ISV, I'll definitely be taking it. I typically take it for one of my products. I think last year I did it for .NET Invoice because he asked some pretty specific product questions.
That's cool. I remember taking it last year. It's interesting to see kind of what the questions are and then what ends up coming out of that survey. So, hey, I've been working on the Audit Shark website redesign, and the contractor I hired has been working on it quite a bit. And he came back with things a lot faster than I thought he would. So past couple of days, I've been building out some of the content, mostly the basic pages and then some of the layout of how I want the pages to be arranged and what links I want to be on the pages. So I've got all of the different things laid out, but I still have to create some of the content for it. I'm pulling in some content from the old website, and then there are certain things that I can't really do much about right now because, like, for example, on the pricing page, I don't know what the pricing is going to be yet, and I don't know what the features that I'm going to be heavily marketing are because I'm still talking to some of the customers or the prospective customers and finding out exactly what it is that they really want. and trying to use that to incorporate into the sales website. So still some conversations to be had there, but it seems to be going pretty well. Definitely no complaints on that end.
Right. Now I'm going to auditshark.com right now, and I'm hoping to see a landing page collecting emails, and it's an old sales website, Mike.
No, it is. I know.
Get it up there.
I think I'm going to try and get this out there probably within the next week or so, and I don't know as I'll hit too heavy on the features for the marketing side of it, but I'm definitely going to put the product out there and start talking, put a landing page out there that specifically starts asking for more emails. I've gotten some more signups over the past couple of days, not both directly for through the survey and through the Audit Shark website. So I've been reaching out to people individually who haven't taken the survey that are on the mailing list, and then asking them to see if they'd go through and put their thoughts into the survey as well.
Very nice. So we got an email this week from Rudy at hireflow.com, and he's emailed us in the past. I think he's asked a few questions, and he was also at MicroConf, and he was just dropping us a line to say that he got a lot out of MicroConf. He says, I think it will have a material impact on my company. He said, I just put up some website changes, putting takeaways from MicroConf into practice. The big one is that I came clean about being one guy. So in other words, Jason Cohen had talked about being honesty in your business and not trying to act like a big company. And so now on the hireflow.com about page, it just talks about him being one person. He says, I also implemented some changes Jason Cohen suggested during a private teardown, like using customer testimonials and dividers on my homepage. That's just two things. I've got a whole notebook to work through. My time at MicroConf will be paying dividends for many months to come. So thanks a lot, Rudy, for writing in. It's cool for us to hear. So there's two things there. One, if you like this idea, HireFlow is a pretty cool product. It's about taking control of hiring for your business, and it allows like all of your applicants to, instead of you just getting a bunch of emails, it all goes into HireFlow. It has a pipeline of people so you can tell where they are on the pipeline. It just helps you manage that process, dealing with multiple job boards and all that. So his landing page, much, much better than I remember seeing it, you know, about 6 months ago. So some good improvements there. And then, of course, microconf.com. If you're interested in MicroConf 2013, we have a little email contact form up at microconf.com. Enter it in there, and you'll be one of the first people to hear about it.
Today, we're going to be talking about some of the free and low-cost solutions you can use for running your business. And we had an episode a long time ago where we basically did this exact same thing. And somebody had commented that we should really come back and revisit that, because I think it's been more than 2 years since we did that. So looking back on it, there's a lot of tools that I use now, some new things that have come out that I, you know, just didn't even exist back then or that I wasn't using. So I thought it'd be a good idea to walk through some of the things that we use today and not necessarily contrast them with what we used to use, but certainly point out some of the new things that are available that people could be using for their businesses.
Sounds cool. It looks like we have 20 or 21 tools. Why don't you kick us off?
So I think in the first category, we're going to go through some of the marketing tools. And one of the obvious ones is Google Analytics. And looking through our previous episode, that actually wasn't on our list. I don't know why.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I mean, it's such a staple. There's a question on Quora about how many Google Analytics users there are, and it's an egregious amount. I mean, there are just different estimates, but some people were saying like, 47% of all websites use it. It's such a prevalent tool. I bet I think of it as like electricity, right? It's like you almost forget that you use it. It's more of a utility than anything.
Yeah, sort of like if you have a website, you're using it, and if you don't, then you're not.
For a free tool, I don't know of anything that compares. But the one thing that I would say is you need to add in purchase goals or email sign-up goals into your analytics. That is the first thing I do every time I set it up for a new website is I add at least one goal, and that's some type of action they should take. And it's super simple to do. It just takes a couple of minutes. We've talked about it on the podcast. I've talked about it on the blog. If you type in how to set up a Google Analytics goal into Google, you can do it in 2 minutes. You just enter the URL of the goal page, and that will provide you with incredible data, not just who is signing up, but where they're coming from, right? It's like it tells you what your most valuable traffic sources are. So then as you build that information up over time, you can later, you know, hit those sites up if you want to advertise, or just invaluable info to have.
Very cool. So the second one is backlinkfinder.com and opensiteexplorer.org. And we'll link to all of these in the show notes. So if people are trying to take notes right now, don't bother trying to get the spellings right. We'll just check out the show notes and you'll see them. But backlinkfinder.com shows you all of the sites that are linking back to your website. And the other one is opensiteexplorer.org. And opensiteexplorer.org essentially allows you to type in your website and it will show you a lot of the inbound links. It'll show you, the domains that link into your site, some of the anchor text. It'll allow you to check the domain authority of your site versus some of the other sites that are linking back to you. It gives you a good idea of how your website ranks in relation to others. And this tool is built by the same people who run the company SEO Moz. So there are some pro-only features. And if you have an SEO Moz account, then you'll be able to see those things like Facebook likes and Facebook shares and tweets and Google's plus one. But there's a lot of free data that you can get out of this, even if you don't pay for an SEO Moz subscription.
Yeah. And so OpenSite Explorer really is the best free tool that I know about for looking at backlinks. And I have an SEO Moz account, so I'm able to run a lot of reports. It's limiting. I think you can only run 3 or 4 a day if you don't have a paid SEO Moz account. But it definitely has information that you can't really find for free elsewhere.
So the next tool is Wufoo.com. And Wufoo, I've talked about it a little bit in regards to running my surveys through AuditShark for that. But what I really liked about it was the ability to see how long people had spent actually filling out the survey. And it shows you a conversion rate for the number of people who hit the survey versus the people who actually filled it out. So you get to see that conversion rate. And I think, as I said before, on AutoShark, I got about a 4 to 4.5% conversion rate on it. And the people who filled it out spent anywhere from 5 to 6 minutes actually filling it out. So it wasn't as if it was they just dropped their email into a web page and signed up for some mailing list. I mean, they actually had to go through some effort and give some thought to the questions that we're asking. So I think it is a little bit more of a qualifier than just, signing up for a mailing list.
And congrats to the guys at Wufoo. I'm pretty sure they were a YC company, Y Combinator, and they sold to SurveyMonkey sometime in the last 18 months or so. So they built up a good business. So, hey, I'll take tool number 4, marketing tool. It's called Hittail. So by now, most people in the audience probably know what Hittail is. It's a tool that helps you mine the keywords in your existing traffic. So it helps you expand your organic traffic by making suggestions for keywords that you should be targeting but aren't. So if you log into Google Analytics and you look at all the keywords people found you for, you might have 500 in a month or 1,000 in a month. And Hittail has an algorithm. It sifts through all of those and it'll suggest the best 20 or 30 or 40 that you should target, that you have the highest chance of ranking high for. And, if you've been listening to the podcast, within the last month, I launched a new feature that basically allows you to do one-click articles. And so now you don't even have to write a full blog post. You can just make a click, pay a few bucks, and in a couple of days, you'll get an article back based on those keywords. So you can keep your SEO going even when you don't really have time to do it. And tool number 5, we have 2 tools. The first is a free tool called Google Website Optimizer. And the second one is a paid tool. It's called Optimizely. And so Google Website Optimizer is actually being deprecated. Google is shutting it down and they are moving their split testing into Google Analytics. There's just going to be like a content split testing area of analytics. So even more things are being moved into analytics. But basically, Google Website Optimizer and Optimizely are just A-B testing or split testing engines that allow you to put out 2 versions of the same page, split the traffic that goes to each, and measure people's behavior to figure out which version of that page works best for you. So I've used actually both Optimizely and Google Website Optimizer. Optimizely makes it super fast, super simple, has more capabilities, but I think it starts at around $19 a month.
So number 6 and 7 both provide some pretty similar functionality, but they are Crazy Egg and Inspectlet. And both of these are JavaScript snippets that you can embed into your website. And what that does is it tracks the users who come to your website and allows you to see what they're looking at. So you get to see what they click on, where they're looking on the site, can kind of track them through the website. And it can help you to figure out if there are things in your UI that people simply aren't looking at. So you might think that, for example, there's this giant button just below a banner that it should be obvious that people should be clicking on. And you know, something like Crazy Egg or InspectLit can show you that people aren't clicking on it because they just don't even see it. They're not even putting their mouse over it or even making an attempt at it. It'll use heat maps to help show you that information.
Right. So Crazy Egg can also tell you if you have an image on a page that you haven't linked to anything and you're getting a bunch of clicks on it. So it tells you you should link it to something, whether it's your pricing page or whatever. Crazy Egg is kind of the 900-pound gorilla in this space. They've been around for, two or three years now. Heaton Shaw and Neil Patel founded it. Heaton Shaw has spoken at MicroConf several years in a row. InspectLit's new on the scene. They are definitely lower priced. You have not used them for their heat maps, but I've used them for the screen recording. So I've used it within Hittail to be able to watch people's mouse movements and actually see their cursors. I've used it with a couple of new features that I've launched to try to figure out if they're having problems getting things done. And so I can just, you know, evaluate kind of the UI and figure out if I need to make improvements to it. So that's crazyegg.com and inspectlit.com.
The next one on our marketing list is Kiss Metrics, and Kiss Metrics is also from Heaton Shaw. And I'll be honest, I really like Kiss Metrics. I love being able to basically set up all of these goals and things in there where you're trying to figure out what the path for people going through your website is and essentially constructing your website in such a way that it guides them through it rather than giving everybody an option, because everyone likes to think that they know exactly what they're doing. And when they go to a website, they have all these different options. But the reality is that if you construct your website in the right way, people will walk through your website in the way that you want them to see it. And they'll do that because of these calls to action, and they'll click on them and go through them. And you can start measuring how many people go through those calls to action in the order that you want. And because of the way that Kiss Metrics is set up, it's just a little JavaScript snippet that goes onto your website, and all of that data gets fed back into Kiss Metrics. And then several hours later, they aggregate it and put it into some fancy backend data structures that make it easy for you to build these reports. You can get good information on where people are going and whether or not they're going through the website in the way that you want them to.
Right. So I think you might describe it as funnel optimization.
That's probably a better way to describe it.
So that's the difference between it and, say, Crazy Egg and Google Analytics, is it's not like full analytics, but it does provide you with a visual look at your funnel. And it can also provide you, if you give it the data, it will provide you with your lifetime value of customers, your churn rate, stuff like that. So it can be also be used as a dashboard. I know a lot of people who do that. I have it working for Hittail, and it provides some good info. I also have a homebrewed one-page dashboard that I use. I pull data out of my database. I see the value of both, and I've been a long-time Kiss Metrics customer as well. As you said, it's from Heaton Shaw, and it is also a paid tool.
So the next category we're going to look at is for domain names. And there's three different tools on this list. There's Lean Domain Search. .com. And that one, the person who wrote that was actually at MicroConf this year. He built Lean Domain Search just to help him find his own domains for products that he was looking at, and then ended up putting it out there. And it's honestly a really great tool. You plug in a couple of keywords and it will spit back a list of hundreds and hundreds of domain names which are available that you could then purchase.
That's cool. Another related tool is nameboy.com, and it's similar. You can plug in a primary word, an optional secondary word. You can check allow hyphens or not. You can check rhyme or not. It's just more options. So it just gives you options of things that are not already registered, which is cool. And then the third one in the domain list is called Hot Name List. So the way I've used this in the past, because I've registered domains through this, is several days a week, the owner puts out a new list of available domains that are kind of like generic domains. So today, he has a category of apologetics, and he has all these .com domains that are available, like biblicalcommands.com, bakerencyclopedia.com, and he has the exact monthly searches and the number of letters in the domain, and just has kind of this list of things to get your mind going. And so he'll cover different topics. And so that's what I like, kind of sifting through it. And then he also has a service where you can give him a topic and he will send you a private list. You pay and you get a private list of domains around that topic that are available. And if you don't like the list, I think he has a money back guarantee.
So one of the categories that I don't think made it into our last list was project and customer management tools. I think the two that come to mind for most people are Basecamp and HiRISE. And I would look at those as more on the free side than necessarily low cost, because even though they are fairly competitively priced, but each of them I think is $24 a month on their own, but they also have free plans that are available. So if you're not, as long as you're not uploading files or, you know, need to do anything beyond what that free plan offers, you can definitely use, you know, the both of them for quite some time before you need to start paying any money for them. So the next one is Trello, and this one's from Fog Creek Software. I've mentioned a couple times in the past, you can essentially use it to manage just about any project that you want. And it's nice to be able to drag and drop things around on the UI. And as I said before, it's a free tool. You can use it for bug tracking. You can use it for project management. You can use it for prioritizing of new features. You can use it for marketing lists, just about anything. It's a very horizontal product. It doesn't necessarily have to be used for software tasks.
And also from Fog Creek Software, I use FogBugs for my project management and my interactions with customers. It's really bug tracking software is how it started, but it's kind of morphed into some project management software. It's not super feature rich for project management. And I would think that if you're just getting started, Trello might be a better way to manage to-do lists and features. I think that's why they developed it. But FogBugs is definitely where I have a lot of my support going through and where I keep track of new features and bug requests, bug mentions for existing software that we have.
The next category that we have is email management. And within email management, it is Reportive, which allows you, it's a Gmail plugin that allows you to see information about the person who either has emailed you or that you're about to send an email to. So if you have an email address, you simply mouse click over the top of that email address, and over in the right hand sidebar, it shows you information about that person. Anything that's linked to that email address through either Twitter or LinkedIn or a couple of other sources of information. And if they have like a Gravatar out there, it will show the picture of them as well, that they have linked to that Gravatar. And it's really helpful for just kind of getting a mental picture of who it is that you're sending an email to. And it allows you to get some sort of a context about the people who are sending emails to you.
I use it multiple times per day. I'm connecting with people via LinkedIn, Facebook, following them on Twitter, doing something that Reportive is suggesting. I love this tool. It's free, which is crazy. LinkedIn just bought them in the past couple of months. It's definitely a good tool. It's a no-brainer for Gmail. I don't know if it works with any other email client, but it's a no-brainer for Gmail. Our next tool is Boomerang. We've talked about this before. I originally heard about it from Dan Andrews on the Lifestyle Business Podcast. And Boomerang is also a Gmail tool. It allows you to schedule emails to be sent at a certain time in the future. So if you're working at 3 a.m, you don't want people to know that, you can set it to send at 10 a.m. the next day. It also allows you to check a box and say, if no one replies to this email, put it back in my inbox. At any specific time, you can just say 1 week out, you can set a specific date and specific time. Tons of configurability there. Now, Boomerang is free for 30 days, and then it's $5 a month. This has replaced my Tickler file. I used to go into a Google Calendar when I needed to remember something a month from now, and I would enter an appointment at 10 a.m. that day, and then it would pop up in my email. But now, if I already get an email that I need to then remember a month from now, I just, boom, you know, say, send this back to my inbox in 1 month. And that's when I follow up on it. So it's been invaluable and saves me a lot of time.
The next email management tool is Postmark app. And there's a few different things that do that provide functionality similar to Postmark app. But what I like about Postmark app is that it allows you to use them to send out email. And you might think that you'd use like an email service provider or something like that. It's really not meant for bulk emails. It's meant for individual emails that you want to send out. So if you have any sort of automated tool or an application where you want to be sending out emails, I'd highly recommend using something like Postmark app, because it keeps a record of whether or not that email was actually sent, because basically you make a call to their API and it says whether or not they got it or not, and then you continue on with your code path. And if there's ever a question about whether or not that email got sent or kind of what happened to it, then you can go into Postmark app and you can look up that email, find out exactly what the contents of that email were, and then figure out whether or not it was delivered or not. And it will tell you whether or not that email got delivered to the person and was read.
And in addition, Postmark puts tons of time into making sure that your emails get delivered. So they connect with all of the spam filters and Yahoo and AOL and Gmail and Hotmail and all those places have these crazy spam requirements where you have to like be registered with them or to have something in your this record. I mean, it's just, it's complex. It's like an entire job unto itself just to make sure your stuff gets delivered. So if you were just on your server at your house or at DreamHost or something trying to send emails, you have a much, much lower chance that your emails are going to get through to people. Postmark app is jumping through all the hoops and everything so that their servers can get through to these kind of limited accounts that tend to block people from spam. So it's definitely worth it. We've talked a lot about it in the past, and it's $1.50 for 1,000 emails. And I continue to add more and more apps to my Postmark account just because I like all the features that it offers.
And I think the important thing to keep in mind about that on the technical side is that even if you send an email locally, let's say you have an SMTP server locally or through your hosting account, just because you send it over the wall doesn't mean that it is actually getting delivered. Postmark app will keep track of all that stuff for you. And because it does keep a record of the transaction log for that email being sent, that's what makes it valuable. It's not that, you know, they're delivering emails and making sure that they're getting there. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's important too. But it's that audit trail to be able to track down exactly what happened for an email once you've tried to send it.
I log into my Postmark account at least 2 to 3 times a week to check to see what's been sent or maybe based on a support request to verify something's been sent. And our next tool, also related to email management, is MailChimp. So MailChimp is an email marketing, email newsletter management tool, whereas Postmark is used typically to, it's not used for marketing email, right? It's used for transactional email, forgot password stuff, notifications in your app, stuff like that. MailChimp is used to manage new email newsletters, maybe manage marketing lists and that kind of stuff. If you haven't heard of MailChimp, it's a good tool. There's a free forever plan up to 2,000 subscribers, so it's definitely worth trying out. If you've heard, its competitors are things like AWeber and to a certain degree, something like Infusionsoft. MailChimp does offer you a lot of capabilities to split test emails. It has autoresponders, follow-ups, easy download of like a snippet to put the sign-up form on your website. So I've used MailChimp for, I don't know, 2-3 years now, and I've been quite happy with it.
So the next category is server monitoring. So the next one is Varelo, and Varelo is one of the tools that you can use in a variety of ways. It's very similar to things like Pingdom, but what Varelo can do is it will monitor your website to see if it's up or down, and it can send you things like SMS or email messages to let you know when it's down and when it's back up. They actually just recently integrated some malware scanning, which I thought was interesting. I don't quite know how they do that, but I did notice that they started including that. One of the nice things that they do is they do sub-minute checks as regularly as every 5 seconds to make sure that your website is up. So if you're really kind of paranoid about having your site go up and down and you really need to know when that stuff happens, go sign up for a Varelo account. They do offer a variety of different ways to be notified when any sort of problems come up. And then if you check out some of the reports, right on their main page, they actually have a listing of some of the reports that show you graphically how well your websites respond over time from different parts of the world. And it's not just websites. They actually track DNS servers as well.
Yeah, I love their tagline. Right on their homepage, it says, "Nobody loves you when you're down. Use Varelo to track your site's performance, keep malware away, and make downtime a thing of the past. Website, SMTP, FTP, SSH, we do it all because everyone just wants to be loved." It's cool. And then they have a nice big graphic. I'm sold.
And the next one is CopperEgg. And Varelo works from their servers to yours, whereas CopperEgg, you have to install CopperEgg on your server. And what CopperEgg does is it provides server performance monitoring metrics, and it will capture those metrics and then send them out to their server. And using those metrics, you can start drilling in and seeing information about your server, about things like the processor load, the memory load, disk IO, things like that. And if you go in and you start looking at their dashboards, it will show you a list of all the servers that you where you have this installed. It works on virtually every platform. There were a bunch of different Linux distributions. You could install it on Windows. You could install it on the Rackspace cloud servers. You could install it on the Azure servers. So if you have an Azure application, you can have it automatically get installed into those when a new virtual server gets deployed for you. And then they also have a mechanism for getting it into the Amazon Web Services servers. So any of the cloud servers that you have that come up in Amazon's cloud, it can automatically be installed on those as well.
And our last tool is in its own section. It's the accounting section. And it's the tool that for small business accounting and aggregation of a bazillion PayPal accounts, it's Indinero. And they're a YC-funded company. Basically, they're like Mint for small businesses. So they take the place mostly of kind of having a small business accounting app. They aggregate different bank accounts and credit card accounts and PayPal accounts and that kind of stuff. And they give you an aggregated view of it. And you can also categorize transactions and get an actual like a P&L, profit and loss statement. And that's what I used for all of my businesses in 2011. That's the report that I gave to my accountant to run my numbers off of. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with Indinero. I love that they're adding new features all the time, but they've also had a few bugs enter the system now and again, and those bugs wind up costing me time. They've never lost my data or anything, but I'll go in and my rules that I've set up are not working, and so I'll have to hand categorize some things. So the nice part is they have tended to be pretty responsive and fix the bugs quickly. Since I have so much data in there, you know, I'm totally going to stick with them, but I do hope they get that sorted out here in the next few months.
Yeah, I have to say the same thing. And I don't know if it's just strictly limited to Indinero. I think that any sort of accounting tool that you use, if there's a problem with it, you don't necessarily want to have to start digging because it's financial information. It has to be right. I forget what it was. There was something that was wrong in my books this past year. And I told my accountant, and he's like, hey, can you go track this down? I'm like, no, it's there's just way too much stuff in there to try and track down. It's less than $100. I'll just pay whatever the tax is on earning $100, whether I earned it or not.
I've totally done that. Problem is when you get that many accounts going into one place, it really is a pain to chase it down. And from what I've heard and seen, because I tried out a number of these different aggregators, like Mint.com, and there's one called Outright, Less Accounting does it. There's several. What I noticed is that the PayPal integrations tend to have weird side effects. Like, I think there's a problem with the PayPal, frankly. When they export their transactions, they'll double count some refunds and they'll double count some of the fees that they refund. And so I don't know that it's the actual provider's problem as much as it is PayPal just has a weird way of doing things. So I think until the providers actually wind up, they kind of have to hack around maybe some of PayPal's code in order to make everything balance out and look right.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate for them because it looks like they're doing something wrong when the reality is there's just not anything they can do about it.
Right. Well, I think that about wraps us up. We've run through, it was somewhere in the low 20s, 22, 23 free and low-cost solutions for running your business.
So if you have a question or comment, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes by searching for Startups or via RSS at startupsforrestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of every episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.